guys, welcome to Not Another Anxiety Show. I'm your host, Kelly Walker, and joining me today is guest Dr. Samantha Brody. Hi.
Hi, I'm so happy to be back.
I know, I am so happy to have you back. Now, do you mind, even though you were just here, if I share a little bit more about you with our listeners before we get started?
Please do, I would love that.
Perfect. Dr. Samantha Brody is a licensed naturopathic physician and acupuncturist and the owner and founder of Evergreen Natural Health Center in Portland, Oregon. She earned her doctoral degree in naturopathic medicine in 1996 and her Master of Science in Oriental Medicine in 2001 from the National University of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon. Dr. Samantha has extensive training and experience in both complementary and Western medicine. She has spent over 20 years in her practice addressing the physical, mental, and emotional aspects of her patients' health to help them effectively address and achieve their health goals. For more, please visit drsamantha.com. And your new book, Overcoming Overwhelm, is coming out this January, this month, yeah. when this episode, we can say this month when this episode
right.
airs.
It will have just dropped a week ago. Yeah, I'm so excited about it.
Great. And we can find that at your website, Amazon.
Yeah, so I have links on my website, drsamantha.com/overcomingoverwhelm. But you can also go directly to Amazon or your favorite, your bookseller that you like to purchase from.
Cool. Perfect.
Thanks.
Yeah, so today we are talking about the inflammation-anxiety connection. And there's been some recent research citing this connection between inflammation and mental health. Can you tell us a little bit more about the inflammation and anxiety connection?
Yeah, absolutely. I will first say that there are more studies on depression and inflammation at this juncture, although we are seeing more and more studies about anxiety. It's becoming more and more clear that this connection exists. The first set of studies that we were seeing coming out were really about the fact that depression and anxiety, mental health issues in general, lead to inflammation. But we're understanding now that we're not sure what's causative. We see more inflammation generally with people who have anxiety and depression, and actually bipolar disease as well. And we're starting to see that with more and more mental health issues. And basically what is becoming very clear is, shockingly, right, as a holistic practitioner, this has been something I've been talking about and learned about 25 years ago, that there's, a connection between the body and your mind and your emotions and your brain that is absolutely, you can't pull those things apart. They're so intricately connected. And one drives the other, and we can't look at things in a reductionistic manner where we pull them apart.
Right.
The good news about that is that I am very much someone who, what I cannot stand when you're on the internet and you're seeing these tropes about, oh, just have a better attitude or just breathe. It's like, it's such a terrible way to blame people for what is a health issue, right? Or if you just went to therapy, you'd be fine. But what we're learning with this inflammation connection is that even though we may not be able to say make our mental health issues go away by decreasing inflammation, there is this very strong connection, and that we do have control, some amount of control, some measure of control. And if we can start hitting things from more directions, we're more likely to be able to see the symptoms abate. So instead of just doing counseling or just doing EMDR or just doing CBT or just making dietary changes or just getting acupuncture or just meditating, we're able to figure out what combination, as individuals, what combination is going to work best for us.
Right. Because so often it's like we take one approach, right? It's either cognitive or the body approach, and we forget like this the cognitive and the body, the mind-body connection is very much exists.
Right? And it's those of us who are we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording, those of us who are scientifically oriented, my instinct is to go to, I want to do one thing at a time to see what works. But ultimately, it's often a combination of things that you need to make it work. And so isolating one thing and saying, is this thing going to make a difference? Which ultimately is one of the problems with studies as well, right? I will see something in my practice that works very well, and the studies will say it doesn't. I'm like, what is happening? And it's because we're doing other things concurrently and looking at the whole picture.
The whole picture. Yeah. Whereas studies, it's just kind of breaks it into these teeny tiny pieces, and it's so much more all encompassing.
Right. And it makes sense to do that. I mean, we have to do that in studies, but it also is reductionistic in a way that I think keeps us sometimes from having the benefit of, for instance, decreasing inflammation to help with our mood, because someone will say, okay, well, I'm on this anti-inflammatory diet, I'm still anxious, therefore that isn't going to help me, and they stop.
Yeah. And is it, it's kind of like which came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, is the inflammation, you know, kind of affecting our mood, or is our mood causing the inflammation? Is it a feedback loop? What does that look like? Or do we know just yet?
We don't know just yet. I think the likelihood is both. They're really trying to figure out how to, it's always hard to come up with, you know, causation versus association and studies, but they're working on developing studies to get a better idea of that. And it really does look like it's both. It looks like when we have anxiety, we are more likely to produce chemicals in our bodies that will lead to long-term inflammation. And then long-term inflammation, your body produces chemicals that then cross the blood-brain barrier and affect your mental health. So I do think it's both. And I think looking for one or the other is unlikely to, you know, lead to a result that's going to have a huge benefit.
That's going to help. And, you know, so what are some of the most common inflammatory culprits?
There are many things that impact inflammation. And the first thing, you know, I just want to say again here is that it becomes very, especially for those of us who have anxiety or who have suffered with anxiety, I think it becomes very easy to turn in on ourselves. Yes. And so I just really want to stress that saying, for instance, oh, well, stress is more likely to change your gene expression, which is going to lead to inflammation. But when you're anxious, you're stressed. That's just kind of
what it is.
What it is. And so when I say, you know, stress causes inflammation, we need to look at stress differently to be able to to decrease our overall load. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, I'm sure. But I just want to say up front, don't think it's hopeless just because you're feeling stress. It's a normal
right now,
response.
Right?
Yeah. Right now. Yeah. Okay. So stress is one thing. And again, that's not the stress of, oh, look, here comes a car barreling down the road, I need to get out of the way. Like, that is good stress. That is when your body should produce stress. But when we end up in this kind of long-term stress cycle, either because we have, you know, trauma history that set us up for, you know, certain kind of, you know, hypervigilance and particular pathways that our brains go down, or whether it's because we choose to drink coffee all day and accomplish a million things when we really don't have time, you know, it's really too much for our bodies, or, you know, whatever those things are, or even the annoying person in the cubicle next to you that is chomping their gum and making you, you know, run and wring their necks, not literally, obviously, but, you know, someone who's really annoying you, but that you don't have, that you don't feel comfortable setting a boundary and saying, hey, that's really bugging me, right? Whatever those things are that cause the ongoing actual production of stress hormone. Obesity can increase your inflammation, and carrying extra belly fat. Although, again, there are many people who carry fat on their bodies who don't have raised inflammatory markers or any issues with inflammation or mental health. So there, you know, it's not this direct.
It's not all or none.
Yeah. Not all or none. Autoimmune diseases such as celiac disease or autoimmune thyroid disease, that will put your body in a situation where it's more likely to create inflammation. And so, again, that's something that I address with my patients and clients all the time. A diet, you know, our nutritional, how we're approaching our diets, high sugar, which ultimately is also high carb, because when you eat carb, it breaks down to sugar. Carbohydrates, they break down to sugar, and trans fats. So inflammatory diets, and there are many things we can do with that. And then infection is another thing that can cause inflammation. I don't know if you've heard of the condition called PANDAS, but there are kids who can very suddenly develop severe anxiety and sometimes obsessive compulsive disorder that actually is triggered by strep infection. And it doesn't happen to all kids when they have strep. It actually doesn't happen to most kids. But, you know, it's not talked about very much in the medical community, but it's a very clear condition that some children develop that is treatable when you actually get underneath the infection instead of just trying to treat the anxiety.
Gotcha. So it sounds, again, multifaceted, right? Like
multifaceted and different for everyone,
right?
So those are things that cause, you know, those are things that generally can cause inflammation. And what is going to particularly, you know, cause inflammation for you is going to vary from person to person. And, you know, one of the things that I have my patients and clients ask me all the time, you know, we'll do tests for inflammation and they come out negative. And I say, that doesn't mean you're not actually having inflammation. Right? Just because this particular test that they're doing doesn't show that. So sometimes they will measure this particular marker called a CRP, And if it's negative, then they'll say, oh, well, there's no association with inflammation, but there are other inflammatory markers, or sometimes it's kind of a subclinical low-grade chronic inflammation that we, for in many studies for a long time, didn't even look at because we don't really have a good way of measuring that.
Yeah. And, you know, how can decreasing inflammation, I guess, not only benefit us regarding anxiety, but our overall health?
That's a great question, and something that I talk about all the time in all of my work, because every disease of aging and most diseases in general have an inflammatory component. I used to say that every disease of aging, except for osteoporosis, which is bone loss that most often women get as they age, but now we even know that that has a huge inflammatory component as well. And so if we're addressing our inflammation, we are necessarily making a choice to have better health throughout our lives. And that's heart disease, it's dementia and Alzheimer's, it's arthritis, anything ending in itis. Itis is indicative of inflammation. So sinusitis is inflammation, allergic rhinitis, which is allergies, is inflammation, arthritis, we get all of those things. And even diseases like cancer have an inflammatory component as well. And if I could pick one thing overall for people to do to improve their health, it would be to decrease inflammation. So yes, it can impact your mental health and help you feel better on the day to day. But big picture, you know, our bodies aren't really built to live 100 years. I think they said that kids born now, over 80% of them will live to be over 100. And
wow.
Our body, yeah, it's crazy. I'm not sure if it was 80%, but I think it was a number very close to that. And the body isn't built, I should say built, but our bodies are quite often going to, you know, develop disease over time. That's part of being on the planet for a long time. And so anything you can do early on to decrease the accumulation of inflammation and not wait until, say, you've already had a heart attack to go on an anti-inflammatory diet, or until you have chronic pain to go on an anti-inflammatory diet, yeah. It helps everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's like an important point to share, is because we're not, you know, it can be easy to get caught in the fear-based mindset. Like, I know if I was hearing this while I was sensitized, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so inflamed. I need to get rid of all this inflammation. And I think that's a nice middle of the road, that like being alive, being exposed to different things on earth, like we do have a level of inflammation that's to be expected.
Right. It's expected.
And being alive, right?
Right?
And being human.
You can only do so much, right? In the book, I talk all the time about you can't do it all. So let's pick the things that are going to be most important for you.
Yeah.
And how are we going to help you the most? So for one person, they're going to say, okay, this is how inflammation is impacting me, and this is what I want to prevent. So you're going to go for the better, you know, the greater bang for your buck, for instance. Yeah. You know, meditation and Tai Chi have been shown to decrease inflammation. And meditation and Tai Chi are also, if you find the right one for you, often, or from a meditation perspective anyway, will also likely help with anxiety and stress. And it will also help with, you know, X, Y, and Z. And someone with an autoimmune diet might choose to approach it from a dietary perspective, right? You can't do all the things. You can't. You can't even do all the things. Even if it's just the things you want to do. That's just the list, or just a list of things you have to do or things you've committed to doing. Life is busy and complicated. And so being able to say, all right, here's what is most important for me to do right now, and I'm going to do that thing. And also, you cannot fail at it. If you're trying to make a change for your health and it's not something that you end up following through with, there's something keeping you from doing that. So how do we identify what the roadblock is? And then what are you going to do practically to get around it? Right at this time of year, I have people talking about resolutions all the time, which drives me crazy because you know, statistically, you're not likely to follow through with the resolution, but also, you know, having this arbitrary goal of this thing rather than saying I'm going, you know, I usually talk to people about using a theme or an intention rather than a resolution. I'm going to this year focus on my energy or being more kind or getting my inflammation down, instead of saying I'm going to stop eating sugar or I'm going to lose 15 pounds or whatever, you know. Pressure we put on ourselves, it is most likely going to end up in our shaming ourselves because we don't follow through with it long term. Yeah.
Lofty goals, you know, I think we're all guilty of setting some pretty lofty goals this time of year. And then we wonder why they don't stick. It's just too much too fast.
Right.
And it's not always values based. Sometimes it's fear based, right?
Right. That too. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, What is it about, this was something that you and I had chatted about kind of on our own time. What is it about this modern life that makes us so much more likely to be in a more chronic state of inflammation? Is it the stress? Is it the diet? Is it a lot of things?
I think it is so many things. And the reason I keep talking about diet, I mean, first of all, I'm a naturopath, so I work with nutrition with every one of my patients and clients, right? But it's because that's something we have control over. To some extent, often to a large extent. Right. So I think that in modern life, it is, you know, not only the diet we eat and the chemicals around, you know, chemicals causing oxidative stress around us and the lifestyle that we tend to live, it's also the expectations of our culture, right? So yeah. We would, in the past, no one would ever be, you know, raise their kids in a house with just their family and no other kids in the neighborhood and, right? And we would never have, you know, dinner at McDonald's, you know, white bread and crappy meat and, you know, whatever that, pardon my French, you know, whatever the thing is okay. That, you know, that is naturally part of our culture that we're choosing. And, you know, sometimes I make a joke with my patients or clients and I'll say, you know, I'm not going to ask you to move to a yurt in Montana, even though that might decrease your stress.
I was going to ask, do I have to? I studied abroad in Kenya and, they very efficiently make their huts out of cow poop because right. They have a lot of cows. They're, you know, they're rangers. So I was going to ask, do I have to move to a cow poop hut to,
you do not need to
decrease
to
my inflammation?
You know, although having a summer cow poop hut might be helpful.
Might be good.
You know? No, but I mean, but it's interesting, right? Because we're in the answer to the question then is, there are so many ways that we live antithetically to what our bodies are naturally meant to do. We're not meant to sit all day. We're not meant to have exposure to the light that's on a computer or a TV. We're not meant to, you know, honestly, even sleep 8 hours straight at night. Historically, we woke up in the middle of the night for a couple of hours. It's called biphasic sleep. And so there are so many ways being in cars, not having your feet on the earth, pavement, you know, and all of those things, you know, I'm not going to trade those things. I live in a city. I like living in a city. That's the lifestyle I choose. But they're necessarily then, okay, I'm choosing this stress, which we do all the time. What am I going to choose? What stresses am I going to choose to take off or decrease or address so I have more bandwidth to accept and deal with and live with the stresses that I'm A, choosing, or B, that I completely have no control over, you know, whatever those things are.
Is that something you talk about like quite a bit in your new book?
I do. That's actually the point of the new book. I work with people to, you know, first identify what it's a four-step program process. And the first step is to look at what's most important to you. So looking at your values and looking at how you want to feel and then also who you want to be. And I'm actually going to go ahead and we talked about this a minute before we got hopped on. I'm going to put a page up on my website for your listeners, which will be drsamantha.com, drsamantha, SAMANTHA.com/NAAS for the show name. And I'm going to provide the first exercise from the book, which is an exercise to identify your core values or to get more clear about what your top 5 to 6 core values are. Beautiful. And I'll also go ahead and give a sample chapter. But the point there is that what we want to do is really understand what's most important to us, because ultimately the thing that keeps our stress down or lowers our overall load, which is the concept that really runs through the book, is how do you figure out what you do have, you know, what you can change, what you can't change, what you're choosing not to change. And then it's a very specific process for identifying what things are going to be most important to address, because A, it's the low hanging fruit, or B, because they're the non-negotiable things to give you bandwidth to be able to do what you want to do. And so being able to identify where you have some control and acting on those things, and they can be little things. You know, for me, having a clear desk when I start to work in the morning changes my entire day. And it's a 5-minute process because I spent, you know, an hour making sure I had an organizational system there. And it's so important for me to do that. And for someone else, it's going to be important to start the day meditating, or, you know, I would way rather, it's much more helpful for me to deal with my overwhelm and my stress load by being organized than it is to meditate. And it's not that I don't ever meditate, but you can't, again, do all the
things. You can't do it all, right? We want to, I think sometimes we get so caught up in trying to do it all and do it all right. And I like what you're saying. It's like, that's not the point. It's kind of checking in, like our biggest values, what is important to us, how we want to allocate our time and our limited time and limited energy. Time. And that kind of contributes again to this idea of inflammation that we're talking about. Like if we're living in a line with our values, you know, like we're not going to get all hyped up and worked up about doing everything right and wrong, because it's so easy to fall into that trap. I know.
So easy to fall into that. And that's cultural, you know, in part, it's for everyone, but in particular for women, the pressure to do it all and be like, you can have it all. You don't just have to do one thing, which is great, except for now we've taken that along with the I think it's a biological imperative, actually, to try to do that, to try to handle everything, right? Because if you're doing all the things that are important, that's what's keeping you alive. It's just that we've kind of stretch that out to how many things are important when they're not really important.
Yes. Now, is there anything else that you think we need to know about the inflammation-anxiety connection before we, or just inflammation or overwhelm or anything in general?
Yeah, you know, I think that really knowing that no matter what your situation is, that there are things that you can do to help your situation. And I know when we're suffering with anxiety, that's, you know, when you're in the moment, it's very hard to see that. But to find someone and get support, whether it's a counselor or a friend or a podcast, to empower yourself to know that there are always things that you can do. And even just saying, I'm going to take control of these things or I'm going to change these things, can help your overall state as you try to move forward making other changes.
So many more options than the anxious brain would let us believe in the moment.
Yes.
It's a very black or white, rigid state, that's for sure.
Right. It sure is.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking the time to hop on the show. And your book has already been dropped. It's out. People can go to your website. They can go to Amazon. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me on again, Kelly. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to chat.
Yes. And that's our episode. Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and take a minute to write a review on iTunes so that we can reach and support more people. If you're looking for more resources like one-on-one coaching, courses, or have a question you'd like answered on the show, please visit notanotheranxietyshow.com. You can also get a free ebook there by subscribing to my newsletter. And until next time, remember, be kind to yourself.